Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world-building podcast. We throw spaghetti at the wall, and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. On today's episode, we, in my most NPR-appropriate voice, will be discussing mechanisms of succession. How does power transfer from leader to leader in your speculative world? Kyle, when you think of mechanisms of succession, what comes to your mind in speculative fiction?
Thanks, Ira. When I think of this question, Game of Thrones is like the obvious example in recent memory, in particular,
which for
like
murder
succession, and because like just murder. There's the obvious like
murder.
Like it goes to like one of your children, just a typical, you know, line of succession.
Yeah.
Keep it in the family line. Yeah. Not super exciting and not interesting. So I don't think there's much more to say about that. That's a historical precedent. It's a very obvious one. Something like Game of Thrones, where like that is on the table, but also it's just literally, if you just happen to sit on the Iron Throne, you're fine. Like no one cares. Like
oh, I see what you're saying.
Like the Lannister just kind of seize the throne, and everyone's just kind of like, well, they're in charge.
Well, because they followed the rules. They found loopholes.
Yeah, it's like
and that's very similar to in Lord of the Rings: Return of the King. That's how Denethor had power. He was a regent.
Yeah, but he wasn't the king. Steward. He wasn't allowed to be the king.
No, but he was. He very much tried to stop Aragorn.
Yeah, didn't work.
No, but that's effectively what the Lannisters did. Was Cersei was. It was just regent after regent after regent.
Yeah, well, yeah, and like they, power is a social construct. A throne is a social construct. Totally. In that case, like the Targaryens conquer everything.
Yeah, conquering is another really good mechanism.
It's the obvious one. Yeah, like
that's a big one.
You can also just seize power by being like, well, we're in charge now. And I think like, Game of Thrones is just like, I'm just highlighting, it's interesting in that the seizing of power, like once it's all conquered and together, everyone just kind of like has like a certain amount of threshold they're willing to accept for bullshittery. Because they're just like, yeah, this is just the power game everyone's doing. Yeah. And like whoever's in charge now, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, or we'll take over eventually. And various people can scheme to also take over without having an army, you know, like, which is, I don't know. It's the show was compelling, why the books are compelling.
Right. I think Trial by Combat's another one we see a lot of. That's
classic.
Dune. That's Black Panther had Trial by Combat.
Yeah.
One that I think is really interesting and is worth thinking about is the rule of two, the Sith rule of two Star Wars, right? Where the master picks the apprentice, teaches them everything they know, and it's perpetuated by this cycle of violence, right? Where there is no way for the master to maintain leadership forever, right? They eventually will be killed by the one that they have trained, by the one that they are training their own. It's really quite brilliant. It's a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, like I've hired you. I'm going to train you. You're going to kill me,
right? Because that's the only way for you
to rise.
Like one of the tenets of our order is ambition and hunger for power.
Yeah,
I am the only thing more powerful than you. So for you to obtain utmost power, you have to kill me, and I know this going into it.
Yeah.
So
it's very cool.
Welcome aboard.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Right. Like, what the fuck do you do with that?
Not a whole lot.
Just wait for them to kill you.
Yeah. Or die by natural causes. But if you're Palpatine, you apparently can't die. You can just live forever in some strange state on a random planet no one's ever heard of, even though you were definitely murdered. Thanks, J.J. Abrams.
That fucking guy.
That's the worst Star Wars movie ever made.
It's so bad. Not to get completely distracted, Kyle. What you got?
What's my menu?
Tell me your menu.
Find your own way.
You can go your own way.
What's your menu?
Go your own way. Forced reincarnation.
Okay. When you go first.
I'm going first.
Force that reincarnation.
Ironically, we were just talking about Star Wars and Palpatine because this is lightly inspired by that character, and also lightly inspired by the process of determining the next reincarnation of the Dalai Lama.
Classic. Good one.
really good. I love the idea of bringing the baby. It identifies the correct objects, the thing from its old life. That's it's beautiful. It's poetic. You know, Matt, like Matt Colville said, nothing you create can be as cool as the real world.
Yeah.
This is a little bit darker and a little bit more Sith-y because I want to have it be that reincarnation does not happen magically or organically. This is something deliberately done by either through psychic tomfoolery, where the selection of the next leader is completed. It can be an infant or a young child or maybe even adult.
Uh-huh.
They are brought before the existing leader.
Okay.
And then that leader forces their own spirit into that new body to continue the line of succession. So The line of succession, here's where I'm going to leave it up to, you know, the author to play around with it. You get to decide, is it just literally putting your entire soul and personality into that new body? So you're the same person just inside a new body.
Uh-huh.
Or do they grant the power, the authority, the knowledge, you know, the historical knowledge of all past leaders to mm-hmm. you, but it is not a choice. Like, you are anointed, you are selected, maybe against your will,
yeah,
to be this person. I think that's more interesting than having it be just, you know, oh, I'm going to force my spirit into you and have you be me again in another body.
It probably, because you have more opportunity for conflict if it's, I'm like merging into you basically.
Yeah.
And it's,
and then you get to sort of have like a Full Metal Alchemist thing, like when Greed and Ling would always have those conversations. I know this is not your world, but when Greed and Ling would have those conversations internally over who would be in control of the body, I always thought that was fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking more in Dune, whenever Lady Jessica gets all of the...
The Reverend Mothers.
Yeah, the Reverend Mothers like zapped into her brain at once, and then she's a totally different person because she still has Lady Jessica as like her primary self, but now she's got all these ulterior motives and this complicated perspective.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that.
I think that's the best analog, probably.
That is a great analog because she's still Lady Jessica. You're right. She is still Paul's mother,
but
she is also now the living incarnation of the will of the Bene Gesserit, right?
Yeah, and she's complicated now because like her motivations
weird
are
weird as fuck.
Yeah, she's really, and like she's like a hollowed out version of her former self, and she no longer has that pure motivation that she had before. I think you could take it a little bit more in the like emperor, because I'm calling, this seems like an emperor type of,
this
type
feels
of,
right.
This is an imperial thing.
Yeah.
Like the emperor takes over this person, and it's like, say the emperor takes over Ethan. And then it's like 70% Emperor, 30% Ethan.
Yeah.
Like it isn't like, I feel like Lady Jessica, it's like 50-50 maybe. But I think it's more interesting if it leans a little bit more heavy. So it's like Ethan can resist and can throw up a lot of like new thoughts and new perspective that might complicate the Emperor's agenda and thoughts, but can't like actively fight it.
Yeah, I think that's more interesting if it's less of conflict of distinct personalities and more how do you blend different philosophies and internal beliefs.
Yeah.
Sort of in the same way that Last Airbender did when Aang went back and had all of these conversations with his past lives about how do I stop the Fire Lord without killing him.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, no, you're still an individual. You still have your own personality that has to be reconciled with all of the personalities of the past,
of everybody,
of the lineage, right? And so how do you do that? Like, what does that look like? So if you have a conquering mentality, like if yours is a lineage of conquest and conquerors, and you just as a person who are selected for whatever reason are nicer, kinder, more gentle, how you would then have to figure out, how do I balance this need to conquer with the need to be gentle and kind, right? How can I, and you know, so you might lead to a more diplomatic sort of expansion.
Yeah.
Instead of a violent one, right? Like, and yeah. and so you could have the same theme, but
yeah,
just changing.
Okay. So then let's get back to the process. You're like, so the Emperor's chosen Ethan. Mm-hmm. Ethan is then brought before the Emperor alive.
Correct.
Willingly, or it doesn't matter?
I think it depends on the person.
Like how does the Emperor choose who they're taking over? Because do they, instead of creating the opportunity for a potential conflict because they pick somebody who has like a distinctly, who has a different approach, do they take like their right hand? Do they take a loyal knight? Do they take their child? And like they're forcing it into, they're forcing like their soul to go to someone's body for some reason. What is the rationale and how much control do they have? Because then why wouldn't they just be like, I will go to my son. So we will stay the same line, you know?
Because the line isn't determined by blood. The line is determined by spirit. So it's like a spiritual DNA type of thing. So who you are physically doesn't necessarily matter. I think that's more interesting. And I think it's more of a, this is where the Dalai Lama comes in, is that there is some sort of group or order that is sent out into the world to start identifying who in the world has the physical, has the strength and capability to follow in the bloodline or in the line of succession.
Okay, so let me rephrase this then from what you're saying.
Through visions, prophecy, or maybe even a physical test, again, like the Dalai Lama.
So the Emperor is trying to pick their successor.
Right.
They send out,
their body is dying.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're sending out a lot, you know, like there's an order of monks. Let's be real. Mm-hmm. Let's be real Buddhist about it. And that order is looking for somebody who matches the spiritual, who's like a spiritual soulmate, a spiritual identical spirit to that of the Emperor, which like they can see through magic and mysticism or something.
Right.
And
ritual
and like
visions, prophecy, whatever.
And everybody know, like in this world, is it only the Emperor that has this spiritual DNA thing? Or is it like, because then is the Emperor's children viewed differently because it's the like the seat of the Empire? Or is it everybody's children are viewed a little bit more like, oh, well, they're my physical child, but like my spiritual child might be somewhere else in the world. Like, how far does this go? Is this just contained to like, as like the Dalai Lama, like this is one person that's important? Or are they saying everybody has a spirit of this power, but like, so finding the right connections becomes more complicated and more nuanced.
I actually envisioned it as more of a communal parenting society where children are raised by a community.
Oh, well, that's a big difference. Yeah.
Where you are born and you, like, you know, you might have a mother, but you are, and a nexus family unit, but you participate in society from a very young age. The community has a role in raising you. And so the reasons for that is twofold. Is one, it lessens the line of attachment from parent to child and creates a bond with the community so that it makes it easier to become emperor or to be selected. But it also makes it so that spirituality, like there aren't as distinct bloodlines in the same sense, because it's more of an open society.
I think that's really cool. And as you're talking about that, I saw Furiosa yesterday, so I've got this on my mind, which if you haven't seen Furiosa, it is actually way better than it should be. And not actually that much CGI. It did not feel that CGI'd. But this is also in Fury Road when they have the like, Morton Joe has his like, his harem of mothers.
Yeah.
And they have a little bit more of it in the second, like in Furiosa. And I think that's an interesting concept to maybe apply here to like really make it where there's a bit more of an anonymity to who the mother is.
So I'm not actually huge on the concept of harems. Like I think they're just generally a little
morally problematic.
There's a lot of opportunity for,
icky.
Yeah, shittery.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, I don't think it actually solves the problem that you're talking about of like keeping the mystery of keeping the bloodline's mystery or unimportant.
Because yeah, because the only people who are in there are like the ones you would know,
kids.
And then people outside of that could you still would be also having kids.
Know, right? Yeah. And like think of like animal breeders, like golden retrievers, like they get a good golden retriever, yeah, yeah. like and you just kind of breed that. Like it's yeah, why I don't like the like, whole breeding thing. It's
yeah,
like
people it gets too far into breeding for yeah, sure. I just, yeah.
I'm not here for it. Like kind of personally, but also. That does make it, for me at least creatively, too close to the Bene Gesserit, who are so focused on crossing bloodlines all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like when you get into like a eugenics yeah, kind of approach, exactly. and that's uncomfortable.
It's just even, like...
And when the intent is like, it's where...
It's
the,
better for a sci-fi context.
Probably.
Less for... This for, is more for of like a fantasy and...
But it's an interesting example of where like the intents of an idea and the reality can't quite mesh.
Right.
Where like... If you try to make a thing not gross, but that's the like when we once upon a time tried to do an episode about empires that were good, and it was really turns hard out, to do,
doesn't really
and it
exist.
Wasn't. Yeah, it was like
doesn't exist.
It was just like oh, this is a
just
failure.
Impossible. Yeah, it's just impossible.
But it's a similar thing. Like, well, if you try to make this work and not have it be gross, you can't. But it is. But it works better from a logistical perspective as well to just be like, this is a polyamorous society. Everybody's having kids and no one's taking care of them individually. They right. are part
it's
of
all
a great,
communally.
It is a communal network that right. everyone takes care of them and then bring in the order of the mystics.
Right.
And they're identifying spiritual families for
correct.
People. They're coming through and saying, well, your lineage, your connections are through these people and these people and these people, and they might not be their bloodline,
correct.
But they are their spirit line.
Correct.
And that's all we care about in this world. We right. don't care about bloodlines. We care about our spiritual
correct.
Connections.
Correct.
And then they do that for everybody. And then you bring in the emperor eventually, where the emperor's like, who's my spiritual?
Right. And then you start having this. And this also is a great opportunity to build out a knightly order for the world. Because then you have sort of like the Order of the White Lotus and Avatar. It's like, who, what is the order like? What colors do they wear? What is yeah. their bannery? That's just fun to do.
And then,
but more importantly, what does the test look like for figuring this out? How do they know? Are they psychics? Do they tell through prophecy, through vision? Or like the Dalai Lama, is there an actual test?
Naturally, if we have these spiritual families, you know, some of them are going to try to be like, break off. And they're going to buy out of the concept, and then you create a lot more tension and conflict out of that you've got people who are saying, you know what, we're done with this idea, we have our spiritual family, we're awesome, mm-hmm. we're gonna do our own thing.
And that could be really fun also, because if they splinter off, mm-hmm. then, and maybe they have a couple members of that knightly order to go with them, they could start sneaking back in and identifying and taking, like kidnapping people who are of their spiritual bloodline and like bringing them with them.
Oh yeah, that wouldn't work out very well, but it would be interesting.
No, but it would be an interesting story arc.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's interesting. Like, so this started as a mechanism of succession and turned into
a full
whole new thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think it still works, like, because you still take that same concept and you apply it to the method of succession, that mm-hmm. whoever's in charge also finds their spiritual lineage through this, and like finds their closest, because it's like, say the emperor be fucking.
Mm.
The emperor's got a lot of kids. The emperor's got a lot of like connection out there. Like, you know, he's been a part of society for a long time. They might have a lot of spiritual family, but it's who's the closest
right.
spiritual match.
Yeah. And that's spiritual what the test is to determine, is to figure out from within this large group.
Who's the best.
Who's
this.
The best.
Yeah. I think we got through it.
Yeah.
And that's the that's world building.
Not all who wander are lost.
Yeah, and well, that's the world building process.
Kyle, your turn.
What if there is no succession?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say an emperor. Let's, mm-hmm. we'll keep it as an empire.
Mm-hmm.
Emperor dies. There is no successor lined up. There are no... Every title, every position in the empire is mm-hmm. vacated immediately mm-hmm. in their death.
Everything's sort of dissolved.
The outer boundaries stay the same. Like they still control the land. All, let's say, like positions, like there's some stuff that has like some continuity, like the armies, but you have to have like enough of a buffer so you don't have like an immediate coup.
Sure.
But the position that is immediately created is, and you can flex around with the title, but like chairperson of transition or something.
Yeah.
I'm very much going with a Roman inspiration right now. They just convene everybody in the capital, basically. Just like all the nobles, all the important people, whatever. Right. And they just start deciding who's taking over which post in a free-for-all.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, not in a clear way.
Right.
Just in a, like, somebody has gone up and told the chairperson, who is, like, got the hardest job in the world now, very much like a parliamentarian.
Yeah, I'm not, I was just thinking that.
I don't have a vote. I'm just keeping track of, has a decision been reached, and is it consensus-y enough?
Right.
Like, if this Julius guy is claiming that he's Pontifex Maximus or whatever,
yeah.
And no one seems to be disagreeing with him, I have to give him the title because we have to move on to other titles. And but if he came up and said, I'm now emperor, and everyone behind him is going, no, then
right.
then
and there's an uproar.
Then the parliamentarian's like, no, you're not. Like, we need to keep debating that one.
Interesting.
So it's just like, it's just this chaos because it's like a sport.
That's very cool.
So you can position yourself in the, and there's an analog that's coming to my brain, like in like board game or something, but you know the emperor's dying. Mm-hmm. You are positioning yourself for whatever title you want within the empire.
Right.
And however big you go increases your competition. Mm-hmm. So if you want a governorship, you can position yourself for that governorship, but it's going to be hard to take it.
Right.
Because a lot of people are going to go for it. You have to kiss a lot of asses and a lot of rings and have a lot of power already going in to get to that title.
Right.
But if you want like a clerk in the like in the emperor's administration type thing, like if you just want like a very like bureaucratic type of job, you can probably get that.
Yeah.
No competition. If you want a shit posting that still has power, you can get it. But if you want the powerful
it's
position,
like director of sewage.
Yeah. But if you want like the cushy
job, nobody else is going to want that. You're going to be like, all right, sure. If you really want it, go to it.
Yeah. But if you want governor of Spain, well, a lot of people want that.
See, I like this idea, and I like that it's all sort of decided by, it's almost like an applause-o-meter, right?
Kinda, yeah.
Right, where it is like
was that good enough? All right, that's good enough.
Yeah, like, and you can sort of just like judge based on
like it's the yays have it. Like, yeah, like you just shouted yay. Enough people shouted yay.
It's pure democracy.
In a way, yeah.
Like in its truest form, but just at a large scale, which is how the hell do you do that? Well, that's where this person comes in.
Well, and within that is how do you, like the empire, like the emperor's position, their selection becomes a little bit more finicky. And that's where I think maybe you take all the governors. Every governorship gets a vote in determining who the emperor is,
and
the emperor can be a governor.
I think that's very cool. I like that because like right now, the way that we think about it, even in parliamentary systems, a lot of positions are decided from the top down.
Yeah.
It's like you put in the leader or the prime minister and then they select their cabinet.
Yeah.
This works the other way. Like you start with the lowest.
Yeah.
Like who's going to be the minister of sewage? Who's going to run the library? Who's going to run the parks? And then you work your way up and then you have the governors, and then the governors are all the ones who come together to select who is going to be there. So you work your way up instead of it being top down.
And as you're like working your way up, when you're electing the governors, you could make it where, and because I think it's key, like the governors select the emperor, but then I don't know if like director of sewage has an extra like power in their vote for a governor. Maybe not, but maybe it's the people who have taken low-level positions in a governorship, they like everyone like by tradition defers to them.
Yeah.
So if all the low-level, if all the mid-level people in the governorship of Spain say we want Kyle, the people from the outside are pushing for Ethan.
Yeah.
But then everyone's like, but the mid-level guys want Kyle. So like, if we don't give them Kyle, like they're gonna fuck over Ethan because like they get to kind of push for what they want, and it's assumed that you'll let them because that's how it goes.
I think that's cool.
Like and like you can play around with it a little bit, but I think it's like it's this jockeying for position ahead of time.
Yeah,
and it's this like the like take the Game of Thrones thing, the like playing this Game of Thrones, like positioning yourself like the Littlefinger and Varys, like. Really, like, playing a game?
Yeah.
but they make it where like they actually have an opportunity where their play can, like they can reveal their cards openly to everybody and say, I'm actually going to be the emperor now because I have played everybody perfectly.
Right.
So thank you for the title.
Because I have connections with the people on the bottom who are elected first to get like these people, because you're building it layer by layer up.
Yeah.
So it's like, I knew who the director of, I made sure that Fred would be the director of sewage so that he would pick Mary to be the director of education, so that Mary would pick Sarah as governor of Spain, so that Sarah would pick me.
Yeah. Well, Sarah would vote for me, but then I was also making sure that I was undermining everybody else with the people who were potential governors in the other places, so that they weren't necessarily on my team, but they weren't against me, and they were against everybody else. Like, you can really have a lot of political intrigue in how you jockey, because the jockeying is, one, not like, it's not treason.
Yeah.
You're allowed to do this.
Yeah.
And two, it plays out like in an obvious way. It's, I'm revealing how I've played the game, reveal how you played the game. Guess what? I'm way better at this than you.
Yeah.
And like that little moment of like, of a character showing to everybody, oh no, I'm the best.
Yeah.
Like, and you didn't even know. Like if Varys got to show how clever he was being with everybody, that would have been nice. If Littlefinger got to lay out to everybody, like, look at the pieces I put in place, that would have been cool. But no, because if you keep playing in the shadows, and it's like, well, take it out of the shadows. Let those people play in the open, like every time the Empire dies.
Yeah.
The Emperor dies.
Yeah. And that's the fun part about it, you're building governance from the bottom up. And I think that's really fun.
Yeah.
And because it does make it more public like that, because it has to be, because you have to see,
Oh
shit, these low-level bureaucrats are electing this mid-level. Oh shit, the mid-level are now, like, and you can sort of start seeing the pieces fall into place leading up to the person sitting in the corner, you know, grinning, petting the cat.
Yeah, when, like, obviously the coup thing I brought up earlier is really pertinent, especially using the Rome example in particular, like, highlights that, like, make, because in that moment, you're very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, there is no emperor, and you have, like, a, not even a governing council, like, you have, like, a choosing the governing council.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you have to have, like, a very good relationship and a very, like, you have to keep the armies happy. You got to keep the generals, like, at bay. And maybe it's just keeping them against, pitting them against each other to be like, you don't want that general to take over because you hate him. So you two keep each other in check.
Yeah.
Like, let us pick the next governors and the next emperor, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
And it could happen. And if an emperor is assassinated, you could just repeat the whole cycle real fucking fast.
Yeah.
So then everybody has, like, the emperor has to watch out if, like, somebody didn't get the governorship they wanted, and now they're pissed, and this emperor's young, and they know the only way they can, like, guarantee they can have another shot is to kill him.
Yeah.
Because you could also, I guess you could kill the governor, but if you kill the governor, the emperor's picking the new governor. Because the only time the only time the whole slate is cleaned is when the emperor dies.
Nice.
And maybe the governorships have like a different, maybe it's if the governor dies, all the governors pick the next governor for that. I don't know. Because then you get, like, there's a lot of, the whole thing has nepotism everywhere, but like there's a lot of bias and stuff. And I don't know if you want to protect against it or not, but
I don't think it so much matters. I think the point is that it sort of works out the way it's going to work out, and let the social dynamics of the world determine that. If it's, say, you implemented the system in the world we were just discussing with mine, where there is no nepotism, really, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's, well, we don't really track bloodlines, so we don't know who's family. Then it's just friends.
Yeah.
So there's still, it's still corruption.
Yeah.
But it's not explicit nepotism.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I think that's,
I think that's that.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of fun. I like that. I really like that bottom up. It's like the cake, the governance cake.
All right. Well, let's microwave some pasta. Lean Cuisine's in there. What you got? Give me that 1 minute piece.
I wanted to go very silly.
Okay.
And succession is determined by a lookalike contest.
I love it.
That's it.
Yep.
There is nothing else there. It's just every...
Do you look close enough? And then, like, the family has a pretty good shot, but otherwise, it's just like, if you're a doppelganger, you're close.
Who knows? Like...
I love it.
It's super random. It's super weird. And maybe there's like a talent competition where like you have to do an impression of the emperor. But if it's too on the nose, like it's too sarcastic, then maybe the emperor gets pissed in a set and has you execute it. Like, you know, like,
And then you've got like a lot of people, like the fashion of the emperor becomes real. Like everyone's getting the same haircut. Yeah. It's like when everyone had the Rachel.
Exactly.
Like, oh, wow, this just took off like a rocket. Yeah. I think that's fun.
So like, every 100 years or so, there's just one national lookalike contest.
Great.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. What about you? What you got?
Very similar, but in the other direction from what I pitched as my main idea, which is there is no succession at all. When the emperor dies, the empire is dissolved into its component parts, and a new empire would have to be formed for it to exist again. Hmm. Where like there's a common understanding that the de jure title is not real, and that every little piece of it has to like, you have to conquer by whatever means, through diplomacy or through war, and make your own empire, your own thing, now that I'm gone, so that you can really have things return to a natural reset state. That like, oh, Alexander conquered Persia, but Persia really wouldn't work well in an empire with Greece, so they just kind of, Alexander dies and they just go back to their thing.
It's sort of like, you know, so there was this point, there was this point in history, like with Alexander the Great, when greatness was just proved by military might and conquering. And it wasn't about actually ruling or governing.
It was just conquering.
It was just, can you win?
Yeah.
Right. And that's what happened was a lot of these emperors, and a lot of these emperors would die and then be like, okay, so now we're all just back to it.
Yeah.
And
they're like, yeah.
Yeah. Like it's similar
to that, but it's like everybody knows that's just the way it goes and everybody wants to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, even like including like Persia would be like,
and like, if one emerges, like doing the same thing,
be like, yeah, let's go take back Alexander's area too. Like it's the, like, this is a, like, it's a game. Like,
yeah.
Everybody's playing this game and like, it's a very bloody one, but everyone's kind of in on it.
Yeah.
No. That's that.
I dig that.
All right, so Ethan, what's stuck for you?
Cake governance.
Okay.
Look, so much of our work, like, things are decided from the top down.
Yeah.
Like, the CEO picks the COO and the CFO, right? Like,
yeah.
I think it's much more interesting politically if it's formed from the bottom up. Like, if the city comptroller picked the city manager, who picked the governor, who picked the, you know, like, I think that's just more, I think that's just more interesting, and I'd be curious to see. And look, maybe we just end up right back where we were with like similar games of politics,
but maybe not.
And I think that could be more interesting. I also am still thinking about what the knightly order would look like that is responsible for identifying the spiritual successors to the emperors, just like, again, like their bannery, are they monks? Are they knighted? Are they, you know, kind of ironclad paladin lookings? Like the logistics are just fun.
No.
What about you?
I think it's the lack of bloodlines in your idea of just everybody is just like a part of this community. No one really knows who, like, whose child is whose at a certain point. Like, it's all kind of vague. And the spiritual lines being the thing that matters.
Yeah.
That feels so, like, that's like a classic, like, world building hook for a, like, you journey to a society in a story and you're like, wait, everybody here, like, no one has a clear family. Like, no one has kids. Like, kids just kind of roam around.
Nuclear family unit.
Yeah. And that's the piece where, like, you're reading a story and you remember that about that section, that group that the character went and met with, who, like, didn't have nuclear families, didn't understand the concept of, like, having a child be their child.
Right.
It's like, oh, wait, it's everyone's child. Like, I think, and having that, like, spiritual family be, like, the thing that dominates.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good, it's just a good idea. I like it.
Cool.
Thanks, But that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.